D-O-T. Gak, I'm from Hub Research. I like the international part. I think I'm going to add that. And we're going to talk today about networks embracing digital innovation. I was excited to do this panel because I think it's one of the most interesting things to think about is with all the change in technology and so many things that are now possible, it's easy to conflate things that are possible to do with things that you ought to be doing. And so the goal for the panel today is talk about some of the practical applications of technology and innovation that can help bring in viewers and build an audience and hear it from this this group of experts who have real-world hands-on experience. Our company does research on the TV industry. We track how people choose, find, and consume TV and video, premium video of all kinds. And I thought I'd just start things off with just about 5 data points from a recent study that we conducted that shows how fundamentally technology is changing the world of TV. One thing that we've found is that people have a much higher bar now in terms of whether or not they will try a new show because they have so many options. This is one question where we give people a slider. They can slide back and forth between these two options. And we say, which one of these best describes whether or not you'll give a show a new try? The number of people who go all the way to the end, the extreme, and say, I'm only try a new show if I'm really confident I'm going to like it, is about 5 times the size as the number of people who say, I'll try a new show just to give it a shot, even if it only looks a little bit interesting. This number has been growing over time. So this shows back to 2017, the number of people who are in that extreme position, you know, most people are somewhere in the middle, but the number of people who say that I'll only try a show if it's something I know I'm going to love from the beginning is growing. The number of people who say I'll give anything a shot just to see if I like it is shrinking. We also ask people, how do you watch your favorite show? And the number of people who say that they watch it on a set-top box from a cable or satellite or telco provider, so that's live TV, VOD, or DVR, that number has been shrinking since even longer than this. We first asked this question in 2013. The number of people who say they watch their show from some OTT source, some online source, is growing. And this year, last year it passed set-top box. This year it's exceeding that by even a bit more. So all this original content from SVODs who then strip away often the network brand when they show it, that kind of consumption is rising. And we can also see that Netflix is overtaking live TV as a particular platform where people watch their favorite show. And in fact, this year was the first year that more people said they watched their favorite show on Netflix than said they watch it on live TV. Now, as we talked about, the SVOD platforms often take they're breaking, in many cases, the link between TV shows and the brands that produce them. So we showed people a list of shows. They told us which of their shows they watched. It was a mix of current shows, past shows, SVOD originals, and live TV shows. And then we said, who originally created the show that you said that you watch? Of all the shows watched on SVOD, 2/3 of people roughly could correctly identify the network that created the show. But if we take Netflix originals, online originals, out of the list, so it's just licensed content, it drops to 43%. So people that are watching licensed shows on an SVOD like Netflix, fewer than half of them recognize or know the network that created the show in the first place. So it's a problem for networks if they're getting disintermediated from this process with consumers. And then finally, the last thing is that as if all this change wasn't enough, there's entirely new kinds of video, short-form video, YouTube video, YouTube influencers that are commanding more and more of people's time. This shows the hours per week that people estimate they spend on traditional TV on any platform and how much time they spend on short-form online video. And as you can see, there's not a direct link. It's not a one-for-one relationship. But as the amount of time that you spend on online video goes up, the amount of time that you spend on traditional TV goes down. So those two, we've seen evidence that they're additive to each other. But there's also it's also clear that these things are competing for people's increasingly finite disposable time. So what we'll talk today is about how networks can use technology to innovate and overcome some of these factors to drive content, to create new kinds of TV experiences that didn't exist before, how they can best employ and develop original content and where it's the most important to have, and how they can keep their brands relevant, along with anything else that anybody would like to bring up. So that's enough out of me. If we can just go down the line here, and if folks could just take a second and introduce themselves, that'd be great.
Me first.
Sherry, you go first.
Okay. I'm Sherry Brennan. I'm Senior Vice President of Distribution at Fox Networks in Los Angeles, and I focus a lot on licensing our content to new entrants into the video space, and I also have a strategic research group which avails itself of John's great content, although I have to say it's a good thing they have that saying, don't kill the messenger, because some of those data points are scary.
Speaking the truth.
Hi, I'm Sarah Rosen. I'm the head of U.S. Entertainment Partnerships at Twitter. My team and I work closely with all entertainment partners, a lot of these TV networks, to help them monetize their content on our platform.
I'm Lisa Shaw. I run digital for Bravo, Oxygen, and Universal Kids. And all I can say is when you have a really rabid audience, let's just use, like, say, the Bravo audience, and the Oxygen is getting there, those true cram aficionados can be just as rabid as a Real Housewives fan. You know, it's fantastic because they're the ones who are embracing digital innovation and new platforms, and we're just lucky to have a very lean-forward audience that just likes to do all these new things, but of course it creates more work for us.
Hi, I'm Pooja Vora. I head up marketing and creative and digital for True TV. And I agree with Lisa. It is interesting when audiences or fan bases lean forward or lean in. I think the issue for us just is measuring it and making money.
Hi, my name is Matt Kaplan. I'm the Senior Vice President of Digital Ad Sales at Univision. And spend most of my time focused on speaking with brands and working with them on how we can leverage what we're doing in the digital space to help drive business outcomes for them.
Hi, my name is Jonathan. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Applicaster. We help network brands and new media companies with their direct-to-consumer strategy. We have a SaaS platform, and we work with some of the brands that are sitting here. Some work with Univision, with Fox.
Thanks. So just as a starting point, I think one of the challenges in trying to approach this idea of multi-platform is that there's so many platforms out there, there's so many different kinds of content that exist or that you could build. I'd be interested to hear, what do you guys think are the most important trends or the most important changes that are happening in how people view, and what are the platforms where there's the most activity taking place that people in the industry, can't afford to ignore?
I can
start. Sure, you go first.
Okay. So we're seeing, obviously, a huge trend to streaming, which has been happening for a long time. And I think about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we were looking at projections and trying to figure out where we thought viewing was going to, go. And seeing a lot of measured viewing falling, and then you know that Nielsen is missing a lot. So even though we use that as our currency for ad sales, we know we're missing a lot. And so we started really trying to estimate streaming on our side just because we thought we've got to monetize this huge bucket of viewing. And I really thought a lot of the projections I was seeing were low, which I think turned out to be true. And so what we're seeing now is a lot of shifting of even live viewing to streaming platforms, which for us is great. As long as it's measured. If it's not measured, it doesn't really matter. So we're seeing a lot of that. And then in terms of platforms you can't ignore, obviously, we go by the numbers. I mean, we look at how many devices are out there, how many of them are actually connected to the internet and watching content. And, it's pretty easy math, really. We also see a lot more viewing on aggregated platforms than we do on siloed platforms. So when you're talking about where you want to license content, or do you want to just have your own, sites and apps, obviously it's important for our fans that we have our own sites and apps. That's sort of, in our view, what we use to super serve huge fans. But in order to get the most viewing, you can't just rely on your own little silo. You've got to have your content out there in places where there are viewers who are going to just sort of drive by it.
I think you sort of have to categorize. The way we look at it is categorize as things that are like you must do. You must be focused on YouTube because of the reach and the scale. Instagram stories, you can reach a lot of people, even though at the moment we really can't monetize it particularly well. So there's a lot of, you know, Twitter, NBC just did a monetization deal with them. So anything that, of course, that has revenue, as we just said, we're going to focus on that. So, you know, and if they have the reach, that's great. But I also think we need to also just do a little spaghetti at the wall. 2 years ago, you know, when podcasting was just sort of starting, we're like, okay, let's, you know, of course, we had no money and how to monetize it. So we're just like, okay, let's create some podcasts. So now we have three podcasts, which download about 1 million a month. And, you know, it's honestly, it's people in our office, you know, who one's a, you know, sort of like a true crime staffers. Another one are a pair of women who interview Bravo celebrities, is what we call the Bravo talent, who come in the office, you know, and the other one is just Watch What Happens Live. We just download the show, you know, in a day with, you know, Andy Cohen kind of adds a little more. And who would have known that you could just build that business really from nothing? And now, in terms of its reach and scale and reaching a younger, you know, for TV and a network like Bravo, we really need to reach younger audiences. So, you know, something like podcasting or increasing, believe it or not, now that Reddit has bought a native video, I think there's some opportunity there. So it's like you have to kind of throw the spaghetti at the wall, and also it has these deeply engaged audiences that you can pop into. So I just think you have to look at each platform for its own value, and then you have to look at your very small team and say, okay, how can we do this in the most efficient manner, or like how can we find someone who's just really passionate about Reddit and they'll just make it happen, you know, because, you know, we don't have enough resources to do all the opportunities there are.
I think for us, it's actually similar. It has to be, you know, like fewer, bigger, better. You know, where can you actually have impact given limited resources? So for us, you know, I mean, YouTube absolutely has been essential. Facebook was super crucial till recently, where they, you know, they changed the algorithm and now publishers are having a really hard time, you know, getting any kind of organic reach. So that's been a little bit tricky for us. But the one piece that I would mention that has been interesting for us is just connected TV. We have seen, you know, VOD continues to either decline or stabilize, but we've really seen a massive rise in our connected, you know, platforms. And that is, it's our environment, you know, so, you know, you can curate it, you can make it look, you know, like you want, versus VOD where you've got to get through, I don't know, 18 screens before you actually find your show. And we can monetize it. We measure it and we can monetize it. So I think that's just the one thing I would kind of put out there, that we are seeing, even though the numbers are small because the base was small, and at least at True we launched kind of last year, you know, mid of last year, but we are seeing a huge amount of growth in connected TV. And a bunch of research that we are seeing talks about how the action moved from the linear TV screen to mobile devices. And while mobile continues to be important for short form video, certainly, and sometimes some long form video, but all the action is now moving back to the living room, you know, to more co-viewing with connected devices on that big screen. So as I look at our medium to long term, I think that's certainly a big area for investment for us.
I would like to add, it's very interesting that Lisa mentioned podcast, I think, because we've seen such a saturation. I think in 2017, it was so evident that you could have your OTT presence and then you would have an SVOD model or some kind of model and then programming and more content and more content. But there's such a competition from two angles on the consumer when he wants to watch video. One is, of course, there's so much supply of shows, and the other is it takes so much attention when you have to sit in front of the screen, if it's the phone even, and you could get a text message or a phone call, or everything really disrupts that attention. And I've really seen this year, we've really seen this year, that the best network brands realize their power as multimedia content producers. It's not just programming. So you could produce, I mean, there was always this ancillary text article and portal approach, but now it could be the really a key business line. We see the larger companies model after the smaller, the new entrants, the new media companies, short-form content, audio formats, textual formats. And so it's not only about video programming. So I think it's very important also when you talk about owned properties and super serving fans to expand the strategy beyond full programming, but to also have audio, text, you know, just like a multimedia approach to that. And then the other part would be there was a big, I'd say, search for innovative features, new features, almost agency model. And we've seen that also with some of our work with Univision in the past. Try to innovate every year, bring to the sponsor something new, something that would excite the sponsor and the consumer. That's very expensive to keep up with. And I think a great example that we follow closely is what Jamie Oliver does journey designing. So I think designing user journeys is a big theme for 2018 moving into 19, but understanding how are users going to want to interact with our brand on the different platforms and just tailoring that. So there, I just was exposed yesterday to an Instagram story. Jamie Oliver is trying to sell through his own property the cookbook that follows the Italian cooking show on Channel 4. So they kind of weaved in four properties in one sentence, brought that together on Instagram, and reached me with paid reach. But they compact these four different touch points. So touch point design, I think, is a big thing to look at and to work on in the next year.
And I think as one of the platforms, as you guys can tell, obviously these guys have a lot to deal with limited resources in terms of where they're putting their content, how they're putting their content. And what we really try to do at Twitter is partner with these television teams and help them figure out how to make the Twitter experience additive, both from extending the content that they already have, speaking to the fandoms that they have on the platform. You know, the Bravo fans are crazy on Twitter, and crazy, I say in a good way because I'm one of them, but they are live tweeting every show. They're craving more content. They're craving behind the scenes looks. It keeps them invested. And then ultimately, we're helping our partners monetize this content, which not only drives revenue, but it gets them additional eyeballs, which is hopefully leading back to more viewership on the shows.
That takes me to my next topic, which I think is one of the coolest things about this, is that the way that technology now has created these entirely new entertainment experiences that never existed before. So there's all of the like the podcast, like we just talked about, as a new form of entertainment, but also as a fertile ground to grow ideas for TV shows. There's augmented reality, like the I think it's on Oxygen with the app that where you can make sort of the crime analysis room.
Forensic detective.
Yeah, right. There's, you know, new types of content, short form content. Quibi is coming out that's going to be entirely dedicated to short form content, premium produced. I'm curious, what do you guys think are sort of the most exciting opportunities for new experiences like that, and what are the risks? What are the are there any sort of things that maybe look cool, they're shiny objects, but they don't solve a problem, they don't add anything to the experience? And how do you tell the difference between those two?
I mean, I can you know, I think for us as a comedy network, short form is super crucial because it's sampling, and also as a network that's had to rebrand. We rebranded 5 years ago from the old True TV to the new True TV that's more comedy based. So I think short form content is super important. I think it always just goes back to a few things. One is, how do you analyze what platforms, you know, what is required for which platform? And then there's a big resourcing piece. So I think while it's possible to get super customized and to think about, we kind of look at two different types of content. There's, of course, custom content that you would create per platform. And then there's just stuff that is sampling, you know, clips from the shows and putting that out there. So I think it's just us trading those two things off and thinking about, you know, for most of us in the television business, we just have multiple properties. You know, you're looking at, in Q1, we're going to have 6 original shows on the air at the same time. Bravo's probably like twice that or thrice that. So I just think it's that trade-off that is important for us.
I think also when you talk about really embracing digital innovation, just as two examples, it's hard to scale if you're not making money off of it. So this augmented reality app we did last year called Forensic Detective, which it was the first app to use this arc vertical kit, but basically you could photograph a room and then you were in the crime scene and you had 7 minutes to solve the crime. And Apple really got behind it, you know, had, I think it has 350,000 downloads. And, you know, marketing paid for it. But then, okay, so what do I do with it next? So the bottom line is it could work for a lot of shows, but the investment to actually do it again is, you know, there's no monetization from it. So you'd have to charge on the app, and it's not scaled enough for the app. Or we're about to do a game that's been announced for Vanderpump Rules. It's like, it's called Series, but it's like that episodes where it's like, you're on your phone and you're interacting with the Vanderpump Rules kids, and you know you make it. It's like a decision tree, but it's, you know. But then basically, if you want to go further, they upsell you, and you have to, like, a freemium model, pay more. So this is all done by Universal Games, and you know, this episode's, you know, is incredibly successful, and makes a ton of money. So I'll be really interested to see if we're able to monetize and scale it. But once again, I feel like, You know, if you don't, then it's like another one-off. Like, to a certain extent, I'm not sure one-off, unless it's a shiny new toy for ad sales. You know, you can only choose to do a very limited amount of those because what are you really getting from it?
One of the ways we've used and experimented, and we do a lot of, I like the spaghetti at the wall analogy because we experiment a lot, and having advertisers to fund that experimentation is always a huge benefit. So Mexican League Soccer is a huge property for us. And one of the things we've done over the last several years with a partner, Verizon, is give a VR experience of being on field level in the stadium for Super Clásico, which is Chivas versus America, big rivalry game. And for Verizon subscribers, they're capable of basically through a VR or 360-degree video, essentially be on the field and have a unique experience. And we're just sort of scratching the surface, but if I haven't played a lot with it yet, but my understanding is NBA League Pass with a VR set, you could sit in the front row for a game. So you can think about, I mean, a lot of the slides you showed at the beginning apply to scripted or entertainment, but I think a lot of places where networks have interesting opportunities to really brand their content and then look at all the places it extends are big live events that still require a viewer, right, at a particular time. So whether that's news events that are critical, whether it's elections or a response to something that's going on, but specifically sports, which has been just, we launched Univision Deportes Network 6 years ago. It's the fastest growing cable network, and it's really driven by an ownership position in soccer. And then that gives us the ability. Twitter Amplify is a huge extension of what we're doing with our soccer rights content. So a lot of our experimentation is not relegated to the entertainment space, and that's kind of where we're playing with things like VR, and the Verizon example for us is best in class.
So I would say one of the questions we get a lot, both from partners and from advertisers, is what's new, what's never been done before. And a lot of times our response is like, well, it's not necessarily the best strategy to create something that's brand new if it's not additive to how people are natively using Twitter. You don't want to force users to have a new experience because some team of marketers, no offense guys, thinks it's like the next greatest thing, because it's not going to be successful. So you really need to think about how are the users engaging with your content, how are they using the platform, and what's going to actually add to the experience. So a great example of creating an iteration on something that was really working is for the last several seasons of The Voice Save Vote is live on Twitter, and it's a simple hashtag vote. There's a lot of engagement. NBC has seen a ton of success with it, but they kind of wanted to add a fresh element to it. So this year we rolled out a data visualization. So in addition to voting the hashtag, you could also see how your vote was impacting the overall total votes in real time, which just keeps users more engaged and hypes up the conversation. And again, is native to what they're already doing. So it makes it bigger, better, and ultimately amplifies it. Plus it created a new monetization piece that we could sell to an advertiser. So it's a win-win for everyone.
So I was going to go down that sort of road too, which is, I think several people have alluded to this, but that it's really expensive to do these shiny new things. And we have, 30 networks. We've got tons of new content all the time. So it's hard to pick one or two properties to do anything special with or to do something really unique with. But what I think would be more interesting would be to pull this technology into the advertising experience, which I think we talked about a little bit on the phone before preparing for today. So one of the things I've been thinking about for a long time, I'd love to hear what you guys think, and I don't know why it's not happening. I don't know why advertising brands are not demanding that we use some of this technology to pull people through a story via advertising. So you could imagine like a 3-minute story broken down into 10 30-second spots, but a whole bunch of 15-second spots in a row that tell a story when you watch all of them. And with technology, we know where people are. We know whether they've seen spot A, B, C, D. We can keep feeding them the rest of the story. I know it's complicated because you have to go across brands and across content owners, but I still think that if I were a big advertising brand, I would find a lot of value in that kind of an idea. And I feel like the advertisers, they're where we're going to get a lot of the money to pay for these things, and yet they somehow are not aware enough of the technology or the possibilities of it to demand that brands like ours do things like that. And I'm just not really sure why not, because to me it feels like such a natural thing to take advantage of the technology to pull consumers through and expose them instead of to 10 Audi ads that are exactly the same, at the end of which you're never going to buy an Audi because you hate them, right? You could have 10 stories about traveling through Africa in your Audi and seeing different things, or going around the world on your motorcycle, whatever, and then you'd want to buy the car.
I mean, I think they do it, but again, the structure is so complicated, you know, with the agencies and, you know, clients, so that I think it's just hard to kind of create those large experiences. I mean, we've done something, you talked about your Verizon piece. We do something with Mountain Dew every year, and every year they ask, so it's around a show of ours called Impractical Jokers, massive fan base, and every year they ask us to amp up what we do with them. You know, last year we did a big VR experience, you know, took something that the Jokers had done live, made it a VR experience, and then took it to Comic-Con where there was 15,000 fans. You know, it was all sponsored by Mountain Dew. They paid for it. So I think they do, but I think it's, again, they are trying to find those opportunities. And often, I think it starts with IP. It starts with what, because often it's not just the experience, but it's what's the experience around, what's the show. So whether it's, you know, Housewives or, you know, sports or Jokers or, you know, so I just think that that's kind of where it starts, and or The Voice. And I think those opportunities are few and far between, you know. So I think that's kind of where, you know, where some of that rub comes in my mind.
We get those requests, and I think when we were talking earlier about sort of OTT and, well, just basically consumption on a full episode consumption on digital services, one of the things that's coming up a lot is the profile for us, and from when I speak to people around the industry, I think this is categorical. Those are your most zealous viewers. Right, the people who, especially if it's your app, right? So if it's Fox Sports Go, or right for us it's Univision Now, those folks are consuming 40 hours a week, right? And so what you have is very high frequency. I think we've all had that experience where if we use an app, even if it's one of the aggregators like a Hulu, like, my God, is there no cap on this creative? Like, I'm seeing it over and over again. And we're getting pushed.
There is actually a cap.
What?
There is a cap.
I mean, we.
I know it feels like there's not.
It's the same. That's exactly right. So I think we're getting that request more and more, and over time, it's going to be required. I mean, we have our business rules, and then we have the requests that come from the advertiser. And because what they can do through technology is they can monitor frequency in a way that they can on television today.
I think that there is a risk in coupling the two pieces when we think about innovation, when we think about ad required innovation and consumer and the consumer demand, because most of the networks that sit here are a part of a public company or a company that acts as a public company and look at profitability and top and bottom line, and the major competition in our field comes from companies that are built more similar to a startup company that only look at growth rates. And when you look at Netflix or these kinds of companies, they look at just the top line, right? And they have such a big investment. And I think that when you look at the consumer experience, they're able to recognize that the only thing that matters is number of users and the retention of those users. And revenues is important, but not as. And then when we look at all the things that advertisers might be asking for, then there's this whole innovation market, because also brands want to be painted in these colors of the most innovative and the first of their kind. When we look at the consumer, I think we're looking one step backwards, and I think like you'd mentioned, like they want a familiar experience, something that they know, like an incremental advancement, not something that's groundbreaking. And Visa did an augmented reality for the Olympics, I think, and you saw the people with a 360 camera on their head. That served a PR value, but it didn't really serve masses. One of our customers, Blossom and So Yummy, which are one of the fastest growing digital networks, they're on Facebook, number two on Facebook. they have for every video they put out over 100 million views, and it's people scraping the bottom of the pan, how you clean up the bottom of the pan, or now it's more advanced tips, and they have the best sponsors, and the general manager, he's a very inspirational public speaker, and he talks about the thought and art of producing these short clips, and it came to mind when you had mentioned about cutting short clips from the programming. And one of the things that we see, I'm not a programmer, I'm a technologist and a consumer, so maybe I can bridge the two. I don't see enough production happening targeted for this. It's more of a reuse of content that's being also filmed in Letterboxd or 16:9 format. So filming in square format, filming in vertical video format. I think those are kind of very early on technology trends that we should look at that aren't widely adopted enough. So when we produce the content itself, we're producing for a completely different format, and then we're using the editing room to somehow make a compromise. And I think that's where network content becomes inferior when that happens. Some produce natively for the social networks. But I think, first of all, recognizing from a technology standpoint that we have to have the whole production workflow in different size formats for the different platforms. That's a big tech trend. And the second, which also is in nascent, is about how we look at rating today, and not in the advertising sense, but actually in the sense that it's still very passive. When we look at all the digital properties, and you'd mentioned an idea of kind of bridging between the different properties and creating a journey on the sponsor level, there's a lack of unification of the platform when we think about CRM. So when I so much as leave a cart unshopped for at Bloomingdale's, I'm subject to so much communications afterwards about the product that I didn't buy, about the product that I might buy, about the product I should buy, about Christmas, about Hanukkah, everything. But in TV and media, that's not happening yet. So we have we meet requirements when we have a new partner or a new customer. We meet requirements for about a dozen analytic platforms, so they're going to want Nielsen and ComScore and Omniture and or Adobe Analytics and Mixpanel and Google Analytics, you know, you name it. But nobody wants HubSpot. Nobody's asking for something that's going to give us a two-way communication, a full CRM like we as a company operate with our customers like Bloomingdale does. So I think if I'm summarizing what I'm saying, one is we need to look at the production workflows and see that we're producing with the right tools for all the different formats and producing the content right. And the other is that rating should become full duplex. There's a room for a conversation with the consumer, and it's familiar to the consumer because of the experiences with all the commerce brands. Any transaction that we make today is subject to that kind of communication, and that's lacking from the kind of the super serving owned properties today in most cases. And then there's this whole conversation about innovation for the sponsor, because that's a whole world that everything is possible and we can be explorative and really touch the future here, because it's not only about reach, it should be. And I think that's where we might also fall in competition. If you have multi-year deals, that's one thing. But if it's a one-off and then you come up with 350 or 500,000 people versus this short clip of peeling an apple that gets ShopRite 172 million views, then there's a question where the funds are going to go next year. But still, that's a place where you could really be open-ended on what you're going
to
be.
And to add to that, I think a third thing that we need to focus on is, you know, TV networks have been sort of known to just, like, take the same content and throw it everywhere. So really creating content that's authentic to every platform. So as an example, on YouTube, which is increasingly you get rewarded from the algorithm by viewing time, right? So, you know, you'd do better to take the best Real Housewives taglines and stitch them all together, which is something we would never do on an O&O or something else, and then make that a nice 7-minute spot, and you stick it up, it does incredibly well. So it's like we just need to, you know, once again, it's manpower, but at the same time, that's fairly easy manpower. So, you know, or like one of the debates we've been having is we have a new home and design block, and most people aren't really familiar with Bravo doing home and design. So
it's Fridays.
It's on Friday. Well, it's moving to Saturdays. It's a struggle. So anyway, so one of the ideas someone had was like, well, why don't you put all the, you know, and all these home shows have reveals, like the before and the after. And so someone said, well, why don't you put the best before and after on YouTube and just glue them all together? Like normally from, let's say, 4 years ago, we would never do that. Like, oh my God, no. But now, because you're revealing them, because you want them to watch the rerun, now we're like a little more desperate. Now we're like, glue it all together and let's see if we can get the word out to get them watching. And by the way, send them to Saturday nights now.
I mean, YouTube's cool, but Twitter has a lot of what we teach our partners is, and this is to your point, leveraging all of the different formats on Twitter to speak to your fans. So yes, short form video is obviously performs extremely well, but so do interactive polls, because it's such a light lift for users to scroll through and click a poll and vote and immediately see how their vote ranks against it. Or moments, which is one of my personal favorite features of Twitter. You can tell an entire story in a moment that users really love to engage with. It's also monetizable. So the example of taglines, you could do best of taglines and you're swiping through and you're getting the moments of that, or some of the best stuff from shows, or we leveraged moments a lot around the World Cup in our partnership with Fox. It's incredibly successful. So when you're thinking about programming your content for the various platforms, you really want to lean into all of the different formats, at least on Twitter, and play with your content in those different formats to keep it engaging and tell a holistic story that gets users excited about what you're giving them.
I think that brings me to one more point I want to make sure that we cover, which is just the massive amount of content and choices that consumers are trying to deal with today. So in our research, the average person today says they use 4.5 different sources, different subscriptions or sources of TV. 3 years ago, it was 2.5. We know that peak TV continues to rise. I think Mr. Landgraf's numbers were up even 10% more this year. And we've also seen that people are pickier about new shows. Another question that I didn't show here, but it would have been relevant. The biggest frustration, the biggest need people say they have is that there's so many shows on that I don't know where to begin. And the whole task, it's a nice problem to have, but people are now feeling overwhelmed by the amount of choice. It's not wholly a pleasant novelty anymore. How do you reconcile pushing content out to all these new platforms in such a way that it's sort of not just adding to that confusion, but it's helping people to discover content? Or no one knows the answer.
I mean, I can tell you, not the solution, but kind of what we try to educate our partners is thinking about becoming part of the conversation that's already happening on Twitter, even if it doesn't have anything to do with your particular brand or your particular show. There's creative ways to inject yourself in that conversation, which helps you sort of rise to the top of everything that's going on in the platform. I mean, there's brands that are well known for doing it the right way. Think about what Wendy's has done, what Arby's has done, is being part of conversations and injecting your spin in it. So that's one way to leverage our platform and get your content at the right time in front of the right audience when they're leaned in and looking to discover something new.
I mean, the one thing we do with Twitter, to your point, and it's been super successful, John, you and I were talking about it. So, you know, we have March Madness, we have the March Madness games, and every year at that time of March Madness, basically there's this tsunami of hatred against the brand, which is basically WTF is True TV. Like, who the hell are you and why do I have to find you? And for years, you know, the brand stood by and there would be like 2 days of vitriol, you know, thrown at True TV, and then it would just go away because they went on to find their other games. And so 4 years ago, we started a campaign working with what was already happening and trying to make really shitty lemons into lemonade, I guess. And we started a campaign, which the first year we wanted to call WTF is True TV. NCAA turned us down. So eventually we made it, we called it Have You Found True TV? We bought a promoted trend on Twitter. We've done it every year. And basically it's just a real-time war room. You know, we have, you know, 17 people in a small conference room making custom content, and we troll the trolls. You know, and I actually had a spot that we couldn't play here today, which is, and we've won a ton of awards and Promaxes and Clios and all of that, which is just like, if you're going to be mean to us, we're going to be really mean to you. And if you are truly confused about where your game is, we will help you find that game.
So what do you say to them, like, when they try?
Oh my God, I mean, all sorts of things. Like, for instance, you know, let's say if there's like a WTF is, why the hell do I have to find True TV? You know, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be like, why the hell am I talking to somebody who has only 12 followers on Twitter? You know, do you not know how to find Google? You know, or do you not know how to use Google? And we create 1,200 pieces of custom content every year. All of our talent will create videos talking back to these people. It's incredible. I'll send you. I mean, it's the best fun anybody ever has. It costs us almost nothing except for the amount of money we spend on Twitter, and it's one of the most effective brand campaigns we've done.
If anybody hasn't seen that, I Googled it before this, and then I kind of went down the rabbit hole because they're really funny. You should look it up.
It's hilarious. Yes.
We also add to that universal links, because at the end of the day, you're going to discover your content everywhere. You're going to discover it on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, wherever the networks are going to promote the content. The question is, do they continue the journey to retain the customer long term? So then when you build your apps and your own direct-to-consumer plays, it's critical that in these social networks you have the technology to redirect back to your properties and not the website, the apps. Because when you talk about discovery, the question is not how you create the discovery for this content, because that was answered already. How do you create it for the next one? And to create the habit of coming back to your own property to get exposed to new content only from you, that would be the one up. Because if you were exposed to Fox content on Hulu, there's no guarantee that the next piece of content you're going to get exposed to is another piece of Fox content. They could be promoting on the Watch Next something by a completely different network. Versus if you got the person into your own property, that would be the holy grail. So we also add to that in the technology side that universal links are critical, because then you can really design the journey. You meet the content on Twitter, but then when you click the link, you're not watching the video necessarily natively. You're redirected to the property of choice of the brand.
I think you need to start by understanding who the real audience is for whatever that show or piece of content you want to consume, and then think about all the resources you have at your disposal. One of the things we have at Univision is we have the largest U.S. Hispanic influencer network, mostly YouTubers, and a lot of them are sort of beauty vloggers. And so if we have a morning show like the Today Show called Despierta America, and if we're doing beauty segments, we'll work with our influencers, sometimes bring them on the air, and we'll observe as much as a 20% lift in ratings amongst women 18 to 34 during that segment. So when we think about our content, we think about who's the right audience for the content. We think about all the tools that we have, whether it's our handles on Facebook, our influencer network, and all the things we can do to drive audience back to that specific property.
Thanks. Well, I think we are out of time. So thank you, everybody, for being with us today. That was really fun. I really enjoyed it. If you have any questions for the panelists, they'll be hanging around for a little bit after the talk. And thanks, everybody, for coming.